On this episode of Inside Boxing Live, we are joined by Corey Urban for a great breakdown of Beterbiev versus Smith. Three light heavyweight titles on the line, closer to an undisputed fight at light heavyweight. I don't see how this could be a bad fight. We'll also talk about what we saw last weekend. Edgar Berlanga, Jaime Munguia. I was at the Hall of Fame. I have some thoughts on it. Let's go. What is up, everybody? Welcome in to another edition of Inside Boxing Live, presented by John Boy Media. I am your host, Dan Canobio. We're gearing up for yet another big main event in the boxing world. It has been a phenomenal year for the sport. And this weekend, we get a fight that I have been yearning for years. I went back and looked at some of my tweets. I've been hoping and praying that we get Artur Beterbiev versus Joe Smith since about 2019. When it was first that Joe Smith was gearing up for a title run at light heavyweight. Obviously, Joe Smith has had so many hiccups along the way, whether it's COVID, testing positive for COVID, whether it's his opponents testing positive for COVID or falling out of fights. Same thing with Beterbiev. COVID obviously did a number on Canada in terms of training, in terms of getting fights. That's where Beterbiev is based out of in Montreal. But we are getting this fight Saturday night, Madison Square Garden, going to be a brawl, going to be a great fight. We're going to get figure out who is number two at light heavyweight, because in my opinion, at least, I think Dmitry Bivol is the best light heavyweight in boxing right now. He just beat Canelo Alvarez. He's undefeated. And I think this right here between Beterbiev and Smith can figure out who is number two, because the winner of this fight is going to have a lion's share of the belts and potentially be one step closer to an undisputed fight at 175. We're getting undisputed fights all over boxing in almost all the weight classes, or we're getting closer and closer, so we can knock off one more weight class to get one face, one name, one champion, not to quote Deontay Wilder. But that is the case this weekend over at Madison Square Garden. It's the only big card in town. We're coming off of weekends where we have, you know, dueling cards, sometimes three or four at the same time. So it's nice to see a fight of this stature get all the attention. And it's going to be on ESPN too, which I think is a great thing. A lot of eyeballs on that fight. So Corey Urban and I will break it down. He has been on the call for Beterbiev's last two fights. He's a great broadcaster, does a lot of work for DAZN, does some work for ESPN Plus, has a great column every Monday on Boxing Scene. And he's a friend of mine. And then he has COVID too, and he still did the show. So shout out to Corey. We're going to get to that conversation in just a little bit. This past weekend, we saw some action. Wasn't the busiest of weekends. A little bit of a snooze. A little bit of we'd be able to catch our breath. Still boxing, though. I think last weekend was all about the Hall of Fame. I was there. I'll have more on that in a bit. But in the ring, we saw Edgar Berlanga pick up a win over Angulo. He bit him. He headbutted him. He did not look good, Edgar Berlanga. More of the same. You know, he is no longer a prospect, and I wouldn't say he's a contender. So he's somewhere in the middle, and you don't want to be in the middle when you're in boxing. It's a dangerous place to be because it's coming to the point where they're either going to serve him up a big-time step up, or they're just going to continue to find the Angulos of the world, the Steve Rolls of the world for Berlanga to fight and figure it out. But we're going on, what is it, four straight decision wins for him. You know, I thought he won the fight, but barely. You know, the scorecards, throw them out the window. They were atrocious. Close fight. Could have been a draw. Berlanga could have lost. Could have been. I would have been. I obviously am fine with Berlanga, you know, winning a close decision. The power department, power landed was close. I actually think Angulo had the edge in power landed. But it's just, I watched the fight at a bar at the Hall of Fame with a lot of boxing people. You know, Andre Rozier, who I just learned was obviously not the trainer anymore of Berlanga, was sitting right next to us watching the fight. That was an interesting wrinkle. You know, Lou DiBella walking back and forth, screaming out, the guy's a fraud. The guy's a fraud, you know, especially when he bit him too. And there's a lot of boxing fans too at the bar. It was kind of cool to watch a fight with all the guys that you usually interact with on Twitter. You know, Adam Abramowitz was there, and, you know, Aris Pino is there, and BoxRec Gray. It felt like we're all part of like a community of like watching a fight live. And, you know, Berlanga didn't look great. So I don't know what's next for him. He's talking about a fight with Jesse Hart. You know, Steven Nelson, I haven't seen him fought in a while. He was coming off an injury. He's with a top rank. You know, I'd throw out Danny Jacobs. I understand both are managed by Keith Connolly. I understand they both train in the same gym. But Danny Jacobs versus Edgar Belanga is an interesting fight. It's a big New York fight. You put that at Madison Square Garden. Danny Jacobs, as we saw in that John Ryder fight, doesn't have a lot left in the tank, but it is still dangerous. Could be a winnable fight for Belanga. If Belanga is able to knock out Jacobs or able to win, that's a big name for him. Do I think that Jacobs can stop Berlanga? Probably not. So a lot can come of that fight. I don't think it will happen because of the managerial stuff and the fact that they train together. And I just don't think Berlanga is going to take a risk like that yet. My guess is like a Jesse Hart type of fight. Obviously, too, another thing, I'm burying the lead here. He just got suspended because of the bite and the headbutt. He got suspended. They're saying about 6 months. So that brings us to about December. I don't think Berlanga was going to fight anytime within the next 6 months. So maybe they were going to bring him back in December. Maybe they wait, bring him back in January. He's getting fined and he's getting suspended. When you bite an opponent, he said that it was his Mike Tyson moment, which is just a ridiculous thing to say. First of all, you should be disqualified on the spot. New York, the ref missed it. It was a bad night for referees in New York. Ron Lipton, what were you doing with the Josue Vargas fight, letting that fight go on? But yeah, you should see that bite. You know, you should be able to use the replay and see that and disqualified on the spot. But, you know, he was obviously frustrated. You bite someone when you're embarrassed. You bite someone when you're frustrated. Sold out theater at the Garden, Puerto Rican Day Parade weekend. They went in there looking to see a Belanga knockout and we get another decision. So interesting with Edgar Belanga. I was up at the Hall of Fame, like I just said, watching that fight. There to see the three classes. I was there in particular to see my friend Lou DiBella get into the hall. Awesome weekend with the three classes, with Floyd being there, Bernard Hopkins, Andre Ward, Miguel Cotto, Juan Manuel Marquez, James Toney, Holly Holm, Layla Ali, Christy Martin, obviously Lou DiBella, Kathy Duva. I'll probably leave so many out. Bill Kaplan. It was an awesome, awesome weekend seeing the dais up there, being at the banquet. The speeches were excellent. You've probably seen the coverage. And if you haven't been up to Canasota, if you haven't been able to check it out, you have to go. It's very much like Cooperstown, where it's like a small, sleepy little town that comes alive when it's time for the Hall of Fame weekend. And obviously, they didn't have Hall of Fame weekend in 2020 or 2021. And that hurts that town. That town thrives off this. It's big for their local economy. And when they show out, it's impressive. You know, they have this on Sunday morning before the induction or in the ceremony, they have a parade where the fighters are like on the top of Corvettes and they're on the top of these cars and thousands come out. It's incredible. It's an awesome weekend. You can rub shoulders with people in the boxing world at the bar watching this fight. You had, you know, Leonard Ellerbe, we buried the hatchet. Me and Leonard are cool. Took a picture, posted on Twitter, you know, walking around, talking to fans. Floyd Mayweather walking around, talking to fans. You know, it's not just Hall of Famers, too. Like Antonio Tarver was there. You know, there was De La Hoya showed up. So it was a really fun weekend. I hadn't been out there in a while. I made the drive with my dad. So it's just fun. It's a great, great time every year. Next year will be another big ballot to get some more fighters in there. But just to see everyone up on that stage who I grew up watching, who fought in the 90s when I, you know, became like, obviously I've always been a boxing fan, born into the sport. But just seeing everyone up on that stage that I just watched, that made me love the sport. You know, guys like Roy Jones, Miguel Cotto. I probably went to all 10 of Miguel Cotto's fights at Madison Square Garden. Obviously, Roy Jones was the heart and soul of HBO. I'm rocking the shirt right now. Marquez with his fights with Pacquiao and his wars with Barrera. You know, the women's fighters getting their due. You know, Layla Ali, Christy Martin, Holly Holm, as we're seeing what's going on with women's boxing today. It was just like that time where we're seeing it in, like, I'm a big baseball fan. We're seeing it with baseball when guys like Ken Griffey Jr. get into the hall and Derek Jeter. You know, guys of the 90s, which is my sweet spot as a sports fan. It was cool to see, and it was like, I felt like big. It felt like a big weekend, and it was. That was probably the main takeaway from this weekend was the Hall of Fame. Let's get over to DraftKings. Obviously, Major League Baseball is in full swing. I'm a big Yankee fan. The Yankees look unbeatable right now, but we have partnered with DraftKings, the official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. New customers can bet just $5 on any team to win, and you get $150 in free bets no matter what, win or lose. Sounds pretty damn good to me. If you're looking to turn a small bet into a big bet, you use parlays. DraftKings is the king of same-game parlays. I have one up on the app, and you can do just that. Create your own parlay, combining multiple bets, like which team will win, how many bases will be stolen, total runs, and more if you're shot at a bigger payout. Go ahead and download the DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use promo code IBL, Inside Boxing Live, IBL. You can bet just $5, and you get $150 free bets no matter what happens on the field. That's promo code IBL at DraftKings Sportsbook, the official betting partner of Major League Baseball. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. MLB trademarks used with permission. The betting lines for this fight are interesting. We're going to talk about them with Corey. As of right now on DraftKings, Joe Smith Jr. is a plus 500 underdog. And that is tempting. We know he's a big puncher, Joe Smith. He's become a better boxer. We know that Beterbiev has been down twice in his career early on in rounds. Beterbiev is a slow starter. Doesn't take him about 3-4 rounds to warm up. Will Joe Smith pounce and go for the knockout early on in the fight? Beterbiev, 37 years old, huge gash over his eye in his last fight. Isn't really showing signs of slippage, but does take a lot of shots. The over-under is 8.5. Over 8.5 rounds is minus 115. Under 8.5 is minus 105. That just shows you how close this fight is between, or how close they think it will go. I'm taking a look at some of these fight props too. Fight to end within rounds 1 through 6. Where is it? Fight to be won in rounds 1 through 3, plus 800. That is intriguing to me. Beterbiev to win in rounds 1 through 6, plus 250. So if you think that Beterbiev is going to steamroll Joe Smith and get him out of there in the sixth round, you can get that for plus money. If you think Beterbiev is going to win in rounds 7 through 12, which I think is the consensus right now, that's minus 105. That's pretty decent value for a guy in Beterbiev that most are picking to win, and most are picking him to win late, because both guys take a little time to warm up. Then when they get cracking, they get cracking. I don't think it's going to go the distance. I think it's going to be a knockout. I'm leaning towards Beterbiev. As much as I love Joe Smith, being from Long Island, grew up in the same town, basically. He means a lot to the East End of Long Island. He's a great, great fighter. It's going to be a war. It's going to be a great fight, a light heavyweight. Cannot wait for that one. With that, let's throw it over to our conversation with Corey Erdman. Our guest is here. He is Corey Erdman, world traveler, broadcaster, writer, pickleball player, Detroit Tiger lover, Notre Dame football lover. I think I nailed it all. Vegan, just a great guy and a great broadcaster. And we're going to break down a big fight in light heavyweight division. Corey, how are you, my friend?
You missed also COVID-19 positive, which is why I'm here in my bedroom doing this. I have about 30 minutes of energy per day, and I've decided that I want to donate it to you, Dan, and to the great viewers of Inside Boxing Live.
Wow, that really means a lot. And I love that you're coming from the bed. I mean, it's getting everyone. People who haven't gotten it, it's coming around for them. So everyone out there, be safe. And Corey, appreciate you giving us some of that time. But yeah, man, you were in Australia for the Kambosos fight. Obviously, we're going to do a lot of Beterbiev Smith talk. But can you lay out your travel itinerary? You went from Australia to call Kambosos Haney, which was probably amazing. And then I'm pretty sure you went from there to Guadalajara for the Zone card, the main event. And then there was an Inoue Donaire fight mixed in there too. So maybe that's why you're laid up in bed right now.
Yeah, you think calling 3 Ring Magazine title fights in 3 continents in 5 days might have contributed to my vulnerability to COVID-19? Maybe. I could see that.
Yeah, so what was it like being in Australia? That scene was crazy. And you know, you're with our buddy Justin Shackle calling it for the international feed and with the Bella. I mean, that looked like a spectacle. The fight, obviously, not so much, but just the buildup and big time boxing being back in Australia must have been something, a great thing to witness.
Yeah, it was, and it's a very unique atmosphere because I'd never been in like an Australian football stadium before, which feels a lot different because even though the stadium, you know, might be smaller than obviously like a Cowboy stadium or something like that, it feels bigger because the audience is so much farther from the playing surface. So it's like you look out and you just see this gigantic, you know, array of seats around you, and it just felt overwhelmingly big in there. And so it was definitely a unique atmosphere to be in. The crowd took a little while to come alive, especially when you were down by the ring. Mm-hmm. I feel like you're so far removed from the majority of the audience that at times you kind of had to look around to see how big the spectacle actually was. But it was really special. It was really unique. Obviously, they didn't get the result they wanted, so I don't think that we got the fullest extent of what that atmosphere could have been, but maybe in the rematch, we'll see.
Do you think there will be a rematch? Do you think there will be another fight in Australia? Will Kambosos exercise that?
I think so. I think that provided that Haney decides to stay at 135, which I guess isn't fully decided, and I don't have any special information one way or the other, but I think that Kambosos, he's obligated to that rematch if he wants to enact it, again, provided that Haney can stay in the division. And there's a lot of money to be made there. And Kambosos is the type of person with the level of self-belief that I think that, you know, even if you think that there isn't a path to Kambosos winning a rematch based on what you saw in that first fight, he certainly believes there is. And if he can do another one of those, probably not in a stadium again, although who knows, but a very big arena, I think that Kambosos goes for it.
Yeah, there are ways that they can finagle something. You're right. It's not a stadium fight. Not when it was a 10-2 type of fight, 9-3, at least how I had it. But that's what's going on in the lightweight division. Let's talk about the light heavyweight division. Huge fight this weekend. I love that there's not many other fights going on this weekend, so we can just strictly hone in on what I believe is the battle for three belts, the battle for who is number two in the division. I think Bivol has entrenched himself as the best light heavyweight in the world after that win over Canelo. Arthur Beterbiev, Joe Smith. You called Arthur Beterbiev's last fight. I want to talk about him first. And I thought in that fight, we saw pretty much what he's been over the course of his career. A little bit of a slow starter, you know, throws about 30 punches around in rounds one through four, then progressively steps it up. And then he gets his guy out of there. Perfect record. He's 17-0 with 17 knockouts. But a new wrinkle in this fight was the cut that opened up and the blood that poured out of it and the urgency we saw from Beterbiev. I came away from that fight saying this might be the most dangerous, scariest fighter in boxing. What were your takeaways from Beterbiev's, last fight being there, calling it?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've called Beterbiev's last two fights. I called the Adam Dinas fight for ESPN as well. And after the Dinas fight, it's interesting because after that Dinas fight where he took a little while to get a guy that he was expected to just blast out in the first round, he took a little while to get him out of there. I felt like Beterbiev's stock dropped a little bit. And that's when people started talking about, oh, well, this is the guy that Canelo can pick off if he wants to become lineal champion at 175 as well. And then to your point, Dan, I think after the Marcus Brown fight, everyone's esteem towards Beterbiev starts going up again because, you know, that's at that time, top five, top six light heavyweight may still be in Marcus Brown battling through the cut. And you mentioned the urgency. I think that viewers could sense that, you know, they didn't know where the scorecards were at that point, but Brown had some pretty good early rounds. You know, rounds one through three were pretty good for Brown. And Beterbiev just seeing him flip that switch and making that decision that he needed to go out and stop Brown, that really, I think, resonated with a lot of people in the audience. You know, you saw a guy that has the capability of turning it on and overwhelming anyone in that division. And that's the skill that Beterbiev has. You know, he is about as good a mauler or swarmer as there is in the sport. And he's a power puncher. And when you put those two things together, it makes him really dangerous because he only needs about 3 inches on the inside to hurt you with one of those power shots. Yeah. He doesn't need space necessarily in the way that Joe Smith does. And we'll get into kind of where his power comes from. Mm-hmm. But Beterbiev is a mauler with a lot of nuance. And he is a handful to deal with. And so far, no one's been able to deal with it.
That's amazing. That was a good summary of his offensive style, because he does a lot of good. He does a lot of things good in there. Like, he can jab if he has to. That's a pretty decent jab, you know, throws it, you know, close to 30 jabs around, which is a pretty good rate. And the power on the inside, you know, an underrated body puncher on the inside. I obviously know about the power punches. You know what's interesting to me? It's only two fights he's had since the Vodzik win in 2019. 37 years old. You know, we've seen this talked about. You know, will a fighter become old overnight? You know, the cuts are, you know, that we haven't seen him cut like that in a fight. I don't necessarily see that in this fight, but he's a guy that I wish we saw more of. You know, 37 years old, who knows how much longer he has? Only two fights since 2019. A fighter that I feel like, you know, boxing fans are just now getting to see, because especially after this, if he's in a bigger fight, but also at the somewhat end of his career. Do you believe agree with that synopsis?
Yeah. At 37, I mean, just logically, you only have a handful of years left, you know, for most fighters. And the way that Beterbiev fights as well, you don't really forecast, you know, a Bernard Hopkins career extending into your 50s for a guy like Beterbiev. It's just, it doesn't seem realistic. And that makes it interesting too, because, you know, like, let's say Beterbiev has a couple more fights left in his career. When it comes time for us to vote on him in the Hall of Fame, what do? You know, his career only lasted but so long. And it'll be interesting kind of how he's remembered because of that kind of truncated run that he'll ultimately have. That's a conversation for down the road. But I don't think I've seen physical signs of decline, at least not appreciably quite yet. Again, I think people were suggesting that after the Dinus fight, but we also have to remember the length of the layoff that was leading into that fight. It was in the early stages of the pandemic when, right. Especially for Beterbiev in Quebec, training was very difficult for fighters in Canada. So there were other factors outside of just pure age that probably had something to do with how he looked on that night.
Yeah, I think when we look back at this pandemic era of boxing, the early pandemic, like the bubble days, I mean, that it is hard to gauge these fighters because of the strict, you know, the restrictions. They weren't able to train properly, the cutting of weight. I mean, that whole time when we look back on that, as far removed as we get from it, we're going to realize that was a strange era of boxing. Guys went out there and fought maybe once a year and they weren't at their best. So that's an interesting way to look at it too. But in terms of looking at this fight, you know, I'm looking at ways of, you know, from both sides, like how can Smith win this fight? You know, Joe Smith, how can he exploit some of the small weaknesses that Beterbiev has? And it's how Beterbiev is a slow starter. I talked about this, 30 punches thrown around in rounds 1 through 4. Then it's like, boom, he steps on the gas and then he's up to his normal 64, 65. The two times that he was dropped in his career came early on in the fight. If Smith, I know that they are very smart, his team. I mean, they know this information. It's out there if you just watch the fights. Smith, if he could pounce early, then I think Beterbiev, he does take time to warm up. I think that be Smith's, I wouldn't say best path to win, but it would be a very good game plan to try to get Beterbiev out of there early on.
I totally agree with that. I think that if Beterbiev has shown himself to be a slow starter, and also, you know, early for Joe Smith, I think that it's not just early in the fight. I think it's early in rounds and it's when the fighters come out of breaks. But generally, I think that Joe Smith needs to use your term, pounce on Beterbiev when he has the time and the space. Because I remember there was a video, I'm not going to remember from where, I wish I could attribute it, but it was someone interviewing Dmitry Bivol after Vodzik Beterbiev. Mm-hmm. And they were asking him, you know, did the fight go the way that you thought it would? You know, both these guys pretty well. And he said, as soon as the fight got to the inside, I knew that Beterbiev was going to win. Because Dmitry Bivol's words, if you fight Beterbiev on the inside, you are not going to win. It's impossible to beat him in there, I think were his words, right? That's coming from Dmitry Bivol. So when Joe Smith is in there, I think he's going to have a lot of problems. But Beterbiev can be hit. And those opportunities, I think, are going to present him when there is space. And when are you going to have space? Well, when the referee breaks you up, right. The beginning of rounds, times like that. So I think that Joe, he's going to have those opportunities. They might not be that often, but when he has them, and he's shown that he will do this, I think that he needs to swing for the fences. And he does that. You know, Joe throws all of his counter shots hard. He throws almost everything hard. Mm-hmm. And that I think is his best chance in this fight. And it's a decent chance as well.
Yeah. Just the thought of Bivol versus Beterbiev, oof, that just got me really excited. And I think going back to what we said, like, you know, 37 years old, Beterbiev, from here on out, I can only see him in big fights. He's in that stage of his career. I feel like this is like a semifinal. This is the second semifinal at 175 after Canelo and Bivol. Bivol came out victorious. Obviously, the winner of this should be able to unify the division if everything, you know, politics withstanding. But damn, Bivol versus Beterbiev would be interesting. But Joe Smith has a chance in this fight. Let's talk about Joe Smith. His resume to me is like everything that is right with boxing. A lot of things went right. You know, having a smaller promoter that's not aligned with a network who's able to work with other promoters and platforms. We're talking about a guy, Joe Smith, that's fought on ESPN, that's fought on a part of the PBC. He's been on HBO. He's fought Funfara, obviously the fight that put him on the map. Bernard Hopkins, Dimitri Bivol, Sullivan Barrera, Jesse Hart, Alito Alvarez, Maxim Vlasov. That is impressive. In an era where we don't see the best fight the best, or we don't see guys put up a resume like that, very impressive. I don't know if that's going to help him in the fight on Saturday night, but one thing about Joe Smith over the years is we've seen him in with very tough opponents, and he's made huge improvements from the Bivol fight.
Yeah, and we've seen kind of an adaptation in Joe Smith's game as well. You know, I wrote about Joe Smith after the Steve Giffrard fight. Mm-hmm. And I think I even consulted with you about his punch stats. There's been a significant change in Joe Smith. Part of it might be stylistic, but part of it in speaking with Joe Smith has been conscious as well. After that Dimitri Bivol fight, he clearly made a decision that I need to throw more punches. And Joe went from basically, you know, kind of a like a low numbers power puncher, a guy who was really picking his shots and waiting for those moments, to a guy who was trying to create those moments on his own with a little more volume. And that is also why there's the possibility for this fight to be special and to be really memorable. I'm stopping short of saying this is going to be fight of the year, because I think that fights of the year usually are drawn out a little bit more. I think, Dan, that this fight could look more like a car crash more like a car wreck than a street fight, right? And it's street fights that tend to win fight of the year, but this might be the most enjoyable fight of the year because these are two power punchers who, once they start ramping it up, once they start get warmed up a little bit more after those opening rounds, also turn into volume punchers.
Yeah.
So that's a particularly explosive combination that we have in this fight.
Yeah, the Bivol fight for Smith, obviously, he landed 38 punches, Corey Smith, in the 12 rounds. He threw 33 punches around, and you're right. I went back and found it. Versus Jesse Hart, he threw 50 punches around. Versus Alito Alvarez, he threw 57 punches around. Versus Vlasov, he threw 74 punches around. Versus Giffrard, he threw 74 again. So that is a clear progression and a change in game plan. I want to throw more punches, and what we're seeing from Smith is obviously we know he has that power, but he is now throwing the jab more. And it's not really a jab that he's trying to land every time. It's like a range finder, which I think will come in handy in this fight against Beterbiev if he wants to not be on the inside with a guy that is probably one of the best inside fighters. But we've seen a change in Joe Smith going from, hey, I'm not just like a brute that just throws power shots. Like, I can box. And kudos to him. You know, he started late boxing, and to change your entire, offensive style that late in your career at the most elite level, you know, that's something that should be applauded, and we'll see if it works. But the idea of him, you know, revving up that engine and getting into the 60s and 70 punches thrown, same thing with Beterbiev. If this fight can go past four rounds is when we start to enter that special territory that you were just talking about. Maybe it is the fight of the year, or maybe it is just a rock'em sock'em brawl. But I think Smith is going to go into this fight and try to box a little more and show everyone that he is not just a brawler. He's a guy that can throw 40 jabs around and obviously have that power behind it. But, you know, the jab, I think it's going to be important. It's something you don't really assimilate with Joe Smith. It is a jab, but he goes in there. And the reason he throws, you know, 60, 70 punches around, because I would say, you know, 30 of them are this pawing jab. And now it's going to be an important punch in this fight on Saturday.
Yeah, I agree. And Joe Smith has a very heavy jab as well. One, I guess, mistake he'll sometimes make with it is that he'll kind of throw it a little bit too close to his opponent, mm-hmm. and he can get countered. Beterbiev can sometimes do that a little bit too. I don't know if you remember before Joe Smith's last fight, Tim Bradley did a little technical breakdown on Joe Smith, and he pointed out how he tends to have this kind of like gather step before he throws his big looping right hand. That'll be something that Beterbiev can look at. But you're right. I think that if Joe can start doubling that jab a little bit more, it can make life a lot harder on Beterbiev. And you know, I want to point something out too. Like, it's not a coincidence that Joe Smith has had these improvements at this stage in his career as he's made more money and frankly has been able to take more time away from his other career, right? We all, you know, we like to post these memes about Joe in the construction outfit and whatnot.
Oh, I love posting those.
Right? It's great.
I will never stop posting those either.
Nor should you, you know, it's what makes Joe Smith lovable. But the reality is that when Joe Smith started his career, his manager made the determination that like, hey, if you can join this union, number one, you'll have health benefits that will help you if this boxing thing doesn't work out, but also you're going to have a built-in fan base that will buy tickets so that we can maneuver you up, you know, throughout your career. Mm-hmm. That also means that Joe has had a second career through this time. But now that Joe's making more money, he can spend a little bit more money with the family business and the tree removal where, you know, I don't know that he's clocking in every single day the way that he was before. What does that mean? Well, you have more time in the gym, so you can improve as a fighter. Like, these things aren't a coincidence. So as Joe has become more successful, I'm sure he's had more time to work on his game and he's improved dramatically as a fighter as a result.
Yeah. I don't know if you watched the Blood, Sweat and Tears special on Top Rank put together. They pretty much spoke on that. It's like, yes, he joined that laborers union. And it was a way for him just to make money early on when he was fighting on those star boxing cards and, you know, making a ton of money. And, you know, to be able to go from that into one-on-one time with his trainer and make some more money. And that's what we're seeing. Two humble guys, really. I did not know. I got to just say that, you know, plead my ignorance here. I did not know that Beterbiev spoke very good English. I did not know that he was such a jokester. Anyone that hasn't watched it, it's on the Top Rank YouTube page, Blood, Sweat, and Tears. It was produced by our friend George Jakovic. It was a really, really good special. And it showed that these two guys are very much the common man. I know that's Joe Smith's nickname. And it's the same thing for Beterbiev. He's like a no-frills guy. Family man, jokester. He comes off as this like intimidating figure. It's like, oh man, I wouldn't want to go near this guy. But you probably know this, you know, from covering the guy. He's just a fun-loving guy. And this is going to be a really good fight between two common men. That's what it is, battling out for the three belts. I mean, this goes in line with the great year that we're having in boxing. I can't wait for this one. And I'm going to make you make a pick, Corey.
Oh my God.
I hate making picks.
Well, okay. All right. I'm not calling.
Well, how do you see? You don't have to make a pick and you're not calling the fight, but yeah. Like, to me, I think Beterbiev is just too smart. I think he's too powerful still. He's still he's still at his prime or still somewhat in it. I think it's going to be a real uphill battle for Joe. Obviously, being a Long Islander, I'm pulling for Joe. I honestly have no dog in the fight here. I just want to see a really good fight. But it's going to be tough for Smith.
Yeah, I'm still picking Beterbiev. I think that like the percentage chance of him winning is a lot higher. I do foresee some scary moments for Beterbiev though. Like I think that, you know, he kind of invites contact a little bit too much to not be bothered by at least one of Joe Smith's shots. You know, Joe Smith is just too heavy-handed that even if he's touching you on the guard, you know, you're going to feel it. And so I think that Beterbiev, again, puts himself in the spaces to be hit because that's how his offense works as well. So I'm going to predict some scary moments for Beterbiev that he works through and ultimately wins this fight. That's going to be my pick.
Over, under 8 rounds, 8.5 rounds.
Oh God. I'm going to say over. I think that this might get drawn out a little bit.
Yeah, I went to the ring website, and they had 20 expert picks. 19 of them were for Beterbiev.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, and understandably so. I think that Joe's like a 6-1 underdog or something like that. If I'm betting on this fight,
plus 600 for Smith, or plus 500.
Yeah. Right, if now. I'm betting on this fight, I don't think that there would be any way to go other than Joe Smith.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Buff. Yeah, I mean, there's no value really on better BF, but yeah. I think it was Sergio Mora was the only guy that picked Joe Smith to win. He also
picked
Rolly Romero to win. So our friend Sergio, he's the best, but he likes to make these underdog picks. All right, Corey, just go ahead and just lay down in the bed, get better, because we want to see you calling more fights. We want to hang out and call some Broadway boxing. Appreciate it, man. This was fun. Hopefully we see a big fight on Saturday. I don't see how it can't be a really good one. Corey Erdman, COVID survivor and a great guy. See you next time.
Thanks so much, man. Next time I'll be able to talk to you from my living room. I'll get out of here.